Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the roster evaluation on the bye week, something I look forward to every year. And my co-host, Brian McFarland, here again to talk about that. Brian, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. How are you?
A lot of fun we had, I thought, in the first discussion. We just joking about how we trimmed the time down to about an hour and 10 minutes this first time. Talked about all the young producers on the team, and we'll talk a little bit about how we divide these out. Some great players, some opportunity to sign players a year before they come up for their contracts coming up this year. So Brian had some interesting things to say about that. I thought one of the interesting things that came up was the availability of two spots to effectively pay a player more that is effectively a homegrown player, because he has to have played in Baltimore for four consecutive years, on a enhanced salary bonus, which they now have for Malik Harrison, and presumably a player like Tylan Wallace could apply to next year. So we'll get that. And of course, we talked a little bit about the veteran cap value concerns, as always, including Marcus Williams and his situation, what's likely to happen, some of the possibilities for extension as well. Great listen. I tell you, I really enjoyed having the discussion. So please try and give that a try, if you will. And we'll jump in and do the offense. I guess I'll just get on the soapbox again and talk about the various categories you have. Young producers, players on their first contract who are providing you value above cap. And that's what we're talking about in all this, is value relative to cap. Cap's the ultimate master. You really have to tame it and get value relative to it, which is almost all done by young players on their first contract. Then you have developmental players still on their first contract, have a chance maybe to be more in some cases, or in some cases it's never going to be more, but they end up still being a value when they're on that first contract. Then you have veterans playing for market value. That's where you spend a lot of your cap. That's where Lamar Jackson is, for example. And you can get tremendous value on some of those contracts. And they certainly have, or you can certainly be not quite getting value. If you really don't get value, they become a veteran cap value concern, which is the fourth category. Only one Raven currently in that category on the offense or special teams. And then transitional guys who are here and going tomorrow kind of thing. And we include everybody down to the practice squad, injured reserve, on the roster. Anybody who the Ravens currently have under contract is put in one of those five slots as we go through this. Take us through the young producers, maybe. And first of all, do you agree with my list that's up there? And maybe pick one you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, what's kind of really, really nice to see young producers when there's two wide receivers on that list.
Yeah.
So that's obviously Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers. I mean, Flowers looks like he's going to be a star. And I do... not to besmirch Hollywood Brown, but a lot of people are like, why are we drafting another small wide receiver? And I don't know how many times we saw Brown catch the ball and drop to the ground immediately. Zay Flowers, small as he is, puts his head down and you're bringing me down. I'm not going down, So I really like that out of him. Bateman's disappeared a little in the last couple of weeks, but he certainly, I think you could see in the Eagles game when he wasn't in there, that it made it harder for the pass offense. Obviously offensive line didn't help with that either, but, I did feel like there was a difference there when he wasn't around, his threat downfield threat. They still need a speed merchant. Maybe that will come on our, developmental guy, one of the developmental guys, but it's nice to have, it's nice to see wide receivers there. And then likely it's going to be an interesting one. Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Let me jump in on Bateman here for a second. And maybe we have a little bit back and forth on these four guys, because they're all important. Bateman's contract Now, you know, he had weird things happen. He apparently showed up 2 days late, which cost him a full year of service, effectively. Meant he wasn't eligible for the fifth-year option. And the Ravens made him a deal, and it was a deal he didn't seem to be able to refuse, which now looks like one of the most valuable wide receiver contracts in the entire NFL in terms of relative to cap. And you know, I've posited anyway during this season that Bateman is one of the only second contract wide receivers you could actually trade for a first round draft pick.
So, I'm not sure you'd get a first, but you more than we ever thought we'd get, you know, more than we ever thought we could get for him. But yeah, and he's under contract for the next two, you know, this year and the 2 years after. You know, next year it's $5 million. The following year it's $8 million. I mean, if we, as you said, I mean, if we continue to see, you know, maybe not as much anymore, but I think he was going to be in the, you know, finish the year around 800, projected out to finish about 800 to 900 yards. You take that even at $8 million, I know it sounds like a lot, but for a number two wide receiver, that's a bargain. Yeah, absolutely. That's for that amount of yardage. So, I mean, it benefited the Ravens. They did right by him. They saved him. Obviously, it eventually came. The truth eventually came out of why he took that deal. But they kind of did save him some embarrassment, I guess. I know he fired his agent. I don't know whose fault that was. The agent should have made sure it was clear he had to show up on time. Who knows? We'll never know that answer. But I mean, having those two guys, you know, locked up for, you know, and producing is something we haven't seen since, I guess, Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin together.
Had them signed for big money. These guys are both cheap, and we're in an era where wide receivers are making more than they ever had. They're remarkable bargains at the position, both of them. This is now we're in the twilight zone right now, where other teams are jealous of the Ravens' skill position players.
Yeah.
Tyler Linderbaum, an interesting case. We talked about him briefly in the first case on the defensive episode, even though that wasn't, you know, the focus of it. Has a 50-year option that they'll have to decide on by, I believe, May of this year. And you're judging for over the cap, that might be around $22 million being thrown in with other linemen.
Yes, because there's no, just like with a franchise tag, all linemen are thrown in together. Obviously, centers are the cheapest generally of the linemen, but in this case for it's just like linebackers and edges, you know, they are outside linebackers and middle linebackers, and you know they had the opportunity with the last CBA, but they didn't further define those categories. And I think part of it is it's harder to in some cases, it's harder to, you know, differentiate. And we saw with Suggs 1 year where they said he was an outside linebacker. So he was linebacker category. He said he was defensive end, and, you know, they have to go to the snaps. And now they're, you know, now it's a little more cut and dry because we have that kind of data that we did not used to have. I guess that's probably why they didn't do it. Just my speculation. But for the Ravens and for, it's good for Linderbaum because that number helps his argument for a higher number. It doesn't help the Ravens, but you know he's not going to get a deal averaging 22 a year for sure. No.
Yeah, but he might help him get extended early because the Ravens don't want to pay that fifth-year option. Certainly, that's a
correct
would be prohibitive. And you made the point you think they might offer him the option. They're going to be giving it to Hamilton, and they can maybe wait on Hamilton. It's a really valuable placeholder for Hamilton at $15.5 million. But with Linderbaum, they may give it to him just because they want to show good faith. But the best faith they could show him, I think, would be signing him here after year three.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, yeah, I mean, if they sign him, obviously, this offseason, and it's never an issue. And you know, there is something – I mean, it's all, and these two, we're talking about Hamilton now because they're obviously drafted in the same draft in the same first round. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're obviously both home runs. I feel at least, I'm assuming they do too, but I feel confident that these guys are going to be stars for years to come. And if that's the case, then getting them done sooner makes a lot more sense because the price always goes up. And, you know, as I mentioned then, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at who the other free agent safeties will be over the next 2 years and who the free agent centers would be over the next 2 years. But the price has never come down. So when you've got a guy you feel is a home run, you're better off getting them done sooner rather than later. If it's a guy you're not sure about, then some, obviously, like Brandon Stevens, as we talked in the last two, you know, this time last year, we were thinking he was in line for a pretty sizable deal. So when there's a guy you might not be sure about because he just, you know, just hit it big later in his, you know, in his career, later in his rookie deal, then you're, you know, you might want to wait on that. And again, with Stevens, that probably, if that's what happened, that probably has worked out well for them than, you know, giving him $14 million a year for 5 years or something like that. But with these two, I would expect one of them to get a deal this offseason, maybe not both. And then the other get it the following year.
And for those wondering, you can't sign Zay Flowers to an extension yet. He's only will play 2 years in the league. He's not even allowed to re-sign until after his third year.
Correct. So,
that's good news for the Baltimore Ravens.
Right. They get him three more years for another year. Flowers. Yes.
Isaiah Likely, a very interesting case because a lot of his future is tied up with Mark Andrews in multiple ways. First of all, Andrews, Likely, and Kolar, their contracts all end in the same year. They're all signed through 2025, which is, by the way, not the Ravens, wouldn't be the Ravens' first choice, other than they've enjoyed all of these years of, you know, productive two and three tight end play. Right. But with Likely, he's one of the guys I would think is right up the top of the list in terms of wanting to extend him early after this season instead of waiting till after 25 and letting him hit free agency.
Yeah, that would be certainly the Ravens' perspective. I'm not sure that's going to be Likely's perspective because if he is going to play second fiddle for a year or two more, well, actually, they're all done next year. So if Andrews is still here next year, even though they're on the field together a lot, it does not seem like Likely shines unless Andrews is not shining. And obviously, beginning of the year, we Likely had that huge game against Kansas City, but, you know, Andrews was still, you know, coming back from injury and then he had the car accident, and, you know, so it seems like that, I don't know for sure, but it seems like that car accident was a little more serious on him, you know, to his body than we were expecting.
One of the things that's been speculated about that game a lot too, and you can definitely see it, is that they were going over and under on Andrews, right, all through that game to take him away. A lot of similar things, by the way, were done to Travis Kelce by the Ravens in that game. A lot of the summer was devoted to how can they deal with Kelce in week one. That game, right, was just very important without going into details about what that exactly means. With Likely, one of the advantages they have in this negotiation, it would seem, is that I think Andrews is a player who can give you a lot of cap space if you cut him. And it's the last year of a deal. You got to stay younger. So rather than sign Andrews to a third contract at whatever age he is, about 30 now, and or signing Likely to a second contract would seem to make more sense in terms of trying to not get decline years out of your one large tight end contract. And then that would kind of satisfy Likely, I would think, in terms of being the go-to tight end here in Baltimore.
Yeah. And even if you did sign into an extension and said, you know, you might have to play, you know, we're going to sign you to a 5-year extension and you're going to have to play second fiddle for a year. But after that, we're not going to re-sign Andrews. And after that, you're the man. I mean, you know, you can make that argument and maybe that, you know, rings true enough to him that would be fine. Yeah, Andrews would be $11 million off the cap if he's not here next year. You know, it's hard to think of him not here in a way, because he obviously got off to the slow start, but he's, you know, he's been very productive over the last, since the first quarter of the season, I guess. So this middle half so far. We've seen that, you know, they, you know, that Ed Reed left, you know, Suggs left, you know, they don't, and now Andrews will only be 30 next year and tight ends can go, you know, go well into their 30s and play at a high level. I mean, I don't know that they would cut him so much. I would think they could be able to find a trade partner. I know he's only on a 1-year deal. And it is, though. It is 11. Yeah, it's 11 million in cash. So for a player of his caliber, you might be able to, you know, and even if they ate a little money to keep the, you know, get the higher pick, maybe that works for them too. You know, we'll eat 2 million of it, and you know, you get him for 9. And so we're still getting 9 million in savings. That keeps the higher, the draft pick a little higher, perhaps. So you're not just a one-year rental guy. He's still a one-year rental, but he's not as expensive. But, you know, that's something if a team's acquiring him, they're probably looking at, you know, extending him anyway.
What would your expectation be if you don't need any money? Okay, they have to pay. They have to take the full 11. What would be your expectation on the draft pick you get for 1 year of Andrews, with the presumption also that the team who gets him is also going to try and sign him long-term?
Right. So the Kansas City acquired DeAndre Hopkins, who I believe is in the last year of his deal, for a fourth. Mm-hmm. So I think the fourth would be the sweet spot.
Exactly what
you're probably asking for a third and hoping somebody bites, but you'll settle for a fourth. I think that, I mean, again, he's only 30, mm-hmm. you know, and he's coming off of two down years compared to his peak from two seasons ago, three seasons ago. So you probably are getting him at a little bit of a discount versus what, you know, what otherwise would have been if he, you know, was still all pro. And of course, I guess if he's still all pro Mark Andrews, then they're looking extending him instead. But, you know, so yeah, I mean, I could see that being a possibility other than just letting him go for nothing.
Yeah, good point. Is there,
because there's no comp pick involved because you're cutting him, so yeah. That doesn't help you, you know.
Oh, and that's, you know, actually maybe that makes it a three because you're the team who does get him. If they sign him, they keep him. If they don't,
he's in the formula, right? Yeah. He would be in the formula. Whether what they get would remain to be seen, but he would at least be in the formula for cancellation purposes.
What's funny about this is the poor drafting teams in the NFL, this is the hell they live in every year, is they can't ever sign a really big guy in free agency because the team who has him won't let him go. So they find themselves in a position where they have to trade a second, a third, a fourth round draft pick to get a player like Andrews so they can then have a year to try and sign him. And it is not the place you want to be. Where the Ravens are with lots of heartbreaking decisions on departures is still the preferable place to be in terms of signing players. The Bears fans just complained endlessly about we could have never gotten a player like, I forget, was it Sweat that they ended up getting? Who was the pass rusher they ended up getting
from Washington? Yeah.
It's just, you know, if they don't really have that option and they can't draft, they don't trust their front office. They're like, well, the draft pick was worth nothing to us, and it's not a good place.
As an aside, did you see that list of the first round picks under Washington's first round picks? For 5 years, none of them are on the team anymore. Yeah, and because it came up when we were offline talking about Forbes and whether he would be, you know, somebody they might be interested in, on waivers. And obviously, I'm trying to remember who grabbed him.
The Rams, they took the whole
Rams
contract.
High. Yeah. So obviously, you know, and it was 5 million, which I guess is not the end of the world if he didn't work out, but you know, they were pretty high in the priority. So they're getting a start on their off season a little early, I guess we'll say.
I don't know if you saw any video of him practicing for the Rams. He's wearing a short jersey and no long sleeve shirt over it, which a lot of thinner players do wear. The guy is a stick figure.
I mean, I know he was small. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like 6'1", 6'2", 166. And he looks like that might be an exaggeration. I mean, he just, you know, you push him over if you're right. Like me.
And we thought Wiggins was kind of slight.
he's carrying a lot more weight effectively. All right, let's go to the developmental guys. And one guy I had to drop into the developmental category from the young producer category this year was Keaton Mitchell. So it was Brandon Stevens on the defense, declined Keaton Mitchell on the offense. But the whole group, I'll read them out quickly. Then you talk about the first player you want to talk about. Rasheen Ali, Corey Bullock, who's on the practice squad of tackle from Maryland, Ben Cleveland, Darian Dalcourt, Daniel Fa'alele, Kadir Ishmael, Charlie Kolar, Keaton Mitchell, Roger Rosengarten, Nick Samak, Andrew Voorhees, Dayton Wade, Tez Walker, and Tylan Wallace. Like a lot of differentiation in terms of just how close they are to make it to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell's kind of the one name because, you know, and I, you know, you obviously feel bad for the kid getting hurt, but and people had such high expectations for him coming back and came back earlier than, I mean, I think we were all talking about more like December than November. But I mean, my initial thoughts were, do we remember Gus Edwards coming back? Do we remember J.K. Dobbins coming back? And they didn't come back, you know, hitting the field like they never left. So, and, you know, people like, oh, you know, how we're going to integrate him? Well, I don't think we need to, you know, and thankfully the offense has been, you know, humming, and obviously last couple of games have been a little less so, but you know, he's probably a guy that, you know, by next year, I think feel very strongly he's going to be up on that list. Up to the, and again, they're going to have to figure out with three different backs how to, you know, integrate all of that. But, so I think he's an easy one to jump up. Hopefully, Rosengarten makes that next step this offseason, gets a little stronger, things like that, that we always hear about, you know, players coming, getting that first full offseason in the weight room and, you know, and not just being the, you know, bright-eyed, crazy-eyed rookie, not knowing what the where the bathroom is and all these kinds of things, trying to figure those things out, much less, you know, how to play offensive tackle in the NFL.
Is there really some story about that that I missed?
It's just one of those general things. They have no idea where they're going and where they're, you know, where this room is and that room, those kind of things.
All right. Well, Rosengarten, as I scored it in terms of offensive line play, has had a decent rookie year. You know, he's right at the middle of the C level. And that's, by the way, that's great. If you're a rookie and you're starting off in that position, that's exactly where Linderbaum was in terms of, you know, being about a C plus in his rookie year. It's great if you can start there. It does show an increase is possible. The problem is it kind of comes with an asterisk because they've been giving him a ton of chip help on that side. And I'm not completely convinced that he's going to take the next level. So he's a left tackle option for them for sure yet. I think he could be, and it might be multiple years before he gets there. Seems to have a pretty decent mirror. Still gets beat outside a hell of a lot more than Stanley does, but outside or inside for that matter. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure about whether that's going to work out.
Yeah, the whole him moving to left tackle was always something I wasn't really sure about. But we'll see. And hopefully the offseason, whether it's he improves that much at right tackle, and we'll get to Stanley in a second, what happens at left tackle, because that's probably their biggest roster decision, really, with this list of players. Obviously, the guys they want to extend, but he's the one. And the deal they made with him, I think, was the right deal for all the parties. But it did leave that door open because he originally was under contract for next year. And as a thank you for taking the pay cut, we'll make you a free agent a year sooner. So, because the money he was going to make, I don't remember what it was, but the money he was going to make next year, he wasn't going to see one way or another because it's that last year of that deal thing, you know.
I think it was about 20 million.
I think it was at least. Yeah.
Yeah. So I may be low on that too, but if, It was in the case, two cases, and Pierce was the other where they shortened his deal in order and then they re-signed him, of course, because he had a great year. It's unfortunate. They may be in the same situation with Stanley, but they needed an extension anyway, and one that would make sense for both sides and reallow them to you know, have some of that money be paid for by an increasing cap in future years.
Sure, absolutely.
I guess we got to talk about a player like Ben Cleveland on this list. He's in the developmental category. It does not appear that he's going to get a chance to develop. He certainly could have been a young producer this year.
I don't know what the story there is, obviously. Well, we'll probably never know, but whatever they're seeing out of him in practice is not what they want to see.
Right.
And, you know, he was a guy that, you know, a lot of us thought he might even start his rookie year, and then, okay, well, he's definitely going to start the second year, and okay, he's going to start the third year. And here we are, year four. And so he would be a guy, if he was playing well enough, he could be one of those 4-year qualifying guys. But obviously that's not going to happen. So So he's going to be.
What do you mean by a 4-year qualifying guy?
That's where you pay him higher.
And oh, lower. Pay him higher. Okay.
It's a 4-year qualifying offer. Now that my brain is working again on that, but yeah, so that's the actual term for it. But obviously, he's another guy. I'm sure he can't wait to get out of here, you know, and try somewhere else in greener grass, so to speak, for him at least.
Let's talk about he would not be eligible for that.
No, he would be. He would be a guy that if he was playing some and, you know, he wasn't in line for a big contract elsewhere. But I think there's too much water over the dam or under the bridge, whichever you want to use for it. That, like I said, I'm sure he wants to leave. You know, it's one of those things where you're a lesser guy and you might have an opportunity and you want to be comfortable here. And, you know, you're comfortable here and you think next year is going to be the year you're going to get a chance to start. But obviously that's not happening here.
Okay. I'm not sure of the exact circumstances, but there is something that does not seem like Harbaugh's either in love with. I think in his case, it's not a case of he's doing something to actually shoot himself in the foot. I think his love for football may not be at the same level as other people. Okay. And he may not be as quick to take to things for whatever reason. Like, you need to be here on time. You need to make sure your A and B and C is good. One of these guys, you just constantly has to be with the guidance counselor, not because he's a smart guy who's a bad guy, but because he's a guy who needs real step-by-step guidance on how to get through things. So, let's see, who else do we want to talk about? Daniel Faalele, kind of an interesting case to me because he's at the end of 3 years here. You could, depending on when you looked at it during this season, you could have said he's maybe even a candidate for early extension, kind of not the top level guy. His agent's not going to tell him, no way in hell touch that. That you might, you know, sign for 3 years, $10 million.
Yeah.
Or he could be a guy that you say and how we want no part of him next year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's the declining value now. And obviously it depends on what they're going to look at this offseason. I mean, I think one of their biggest mistakes last offseason was not bringing back
Zeitler.
Yeah. I mean, because then you're only worried about one guard spot, not both of them. And you've got five candidates for one spot as opposed to five for two or four for two, whatever you want, you know, looking at the numbers. Hopefully Voorhees, again, the year off of the injury, hopefully he comes back next year being the guy we thought he was going to be, and he can fill one of those spots. But the guard could be a guy they draft. I mean, what if they drafted one first round guard, I think, in their history. I'm not saying they're going to go first round, but they generally guards aren't second round either. So, but I think you could see a third round guard, you know, very easily. Obviously, it all depends on how the board falls, but yeah, and maybe they even bring a veteran guy. Maybe they bring Zeitler back.
Available.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, if Zeitler wins a Super Bowl in Detroit, my guess is he might just hang him up, but so go out on top. But yeah, I think that was the big mistake. So of this list, I mean, Cleveland's gone, I think, and Voorhees hopefully becomes a starter next year, and then goes up into the young producer column.
Charlie Kolar maybe coming back on another year's. One thing they've really missed him against the Eagles. They missed having another blocker so that they could put Ricard in the backfield. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is he hasn't got that many receiving targets, even though he's done pretty well on a per target basis. Mm-hmm. But if he's moves up on the totem pole because of an Andrews cut or trade,
right,
then it might give the Ravens the option to or give him a chance to increase his value in year four.
Yeah, absolutely. And that could be one of those guys that as we were talking on the defensive, we're doing the defense, a guy that's that January candidate for an extension. He's not going to break the bank elsewhere. He's comfortable here, and he's not going to, you know, nobody's going to sign him to be a number one, but he's comfortable here being a number two next year.
What's your number on that? Where would you figure that would fit in?
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to depend on what kind of targets he gets. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you never know what the league thinks also. Okay, well, you know, he didn't get a lot of targets in Baltimore, but we think he's got, you know, the ability to, you know, actually be a real producer, not just a second, you know. But you could, I mean, you could see him at a, you know, $5 million a year kind of range, maybe 3 years, 15, something like that. Maybe only wants 2 years at 10, and because he doesn't want to get locked to, you know, if Likely gets hurt, he becomes the number one and, you know, and explodes because Lamar loves his tight ends, you know, then maybe, you know, he doesn't want to get locked in. Now I got to play, you know, $5 million for, you know, 3 years. And now I, you know, I could definitely get more on the market now, but I'm only in year two, something like that. So the 2 years, 10 would probably be, I think, probably, I mean, obviously different roles and all, but I mean, that's the range you're looking at Ricard in, a fullback versus fullback slash tight end, obviously a different hybrid, different than Kohler, but that's probably that range of your backup, your second tight end, your blocking tight end, whatever you want to call them.
So in the case of Kohler, he would be signed for this next year on his rookie deal, and you're talking about extending him for 2 years for 10. So he'd be playing with the Ravens through 2027 if he had that deal. I'm assuming that's what we mean, right?
Yeah, I was thinking if he, you know, if Andrews is not here next year, one way, shape, or form, and Kohler's the second, you know, you get that, you know, that December extension at the end of the year when you're trying to use up some of your excess cap space. And get that again, get that pro, you know, so if he gets a bonus, you're only adding 2 years, but you can spread that bonus out over the 3 years, because mm-hmm. you would have your 25, 26 and 20, and then the 2 years, 26 and 27. So if you did have to cut him or trade him in the future, you've gotten rid of one third of that, you know, that as opposed to one half of that bonus.
All right. Is a lot of, so some players who fit in lower on the scale, they also get less total bonus and more of it in salary. Patrick Queen's contract with the Steelers is unbelievably cheap in terms of the total amount of front end money that he got relative to the total. And it puts the Steelers in a great position to cut him if they want to. Now, they may not want to. I don't think he's played that well, but they may not want to cut him anyway. But the Ravens, with a player like Kohler, does it make sense for that to be the case, or do they want more steepness in that contract to kind of take advantage of what's going on with the escalation in salaries?
Part of that is philosophy. The Steelers have traditionally given smaller bonuses, mm-hmm. Obviously it's changed with some of their bigger names, but they traditionally were not giving guarantees of second year salary or third year salary like a lot of teams did. So the Ravens in a way, by giving out the big bonus, in some cases they have already pre-restructured the deal to not exactly, because there's still some flexibility there, whereas the Steelers, you always hear people, you know, I mean, for years, kind of not as bad as the Saints, but you would hear people talk about the Steelers. Well, they're up against the cap, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of that was salary that could easily be turned into bonus. So so they would just restructure a bunch of guys. And in the end, it amounted to the same thing. You know, it just was a different way of doing it. But that's why also they don't go outside and go for big free agents, because big free agents want the big signing bonus, because it makes it harder for you to cut me down the road. So, you know, that's, and a part of the Ravens philosophy, probably, you know, Ozzie Newsome was always, I want to be fair to the players. You know, he told Ed Reed not to take a 7 year deal because I'm not restructuring it. I'm not redoing it. You know, if you take the seven, I'll give you a 4 year deal, take it. But if I give you seven, you know, we're not talking about this again. And you know, so that was his philosophy. Players should take shorter term deals, because that's what he would have done as a player. That was, you know, his, obviously when he was playing, the players didn't have the power they have now, but the earning ability they have now, maybe, but so that was different. But that, so I think that's just been somewhat ingrained in the Ravens philosophy, and the Steelers philosophy is obviously somewhat the opposite, but in the end, it ultimately pretty much ends up in the same place.
you know, one of the great things about it is the Steelers and Ravens get to have a philosophy, because the Steelers, Ravens, and Packers have been by far and away the best drafting teams in the entire NFL. And you get to have a philosophy. You get to decide what your right. organizational thought is, instead of having it foisted upon you by the rest of the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can't draft players. All right. Other players in this group we might need to talk about. Tez Walker, kind of unfortunate he hasn't gotten a shot in his first year. I still would have liked for him to get some, at least a few targets this year. But, it proved to be very kind of fragile, kind of not the level of toughness I was kind of expecting from a bigger receiver. Got pushed around by Christian Matthew, in particular in the preseason a lot, or in camp, I should say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just football, but you know, you want your guys to be able to play through contact and whatnot. I guess I'll bring up Tylan Wallace again. Good bet on him that he might be one of the two special vet contracts that gets paid extra money, but
yeah, I mean, I think the Ravens would certainly like that. He has value as a, you know, I mean, we've obviously seen him make some big plays even in the passing game, you know, where we hadn't always in the past. But he may be a guy that might, again, depends on the market, but he might be a guy that's, I feel like, you know, can contribute more. And I'm probably on a 1-year deal. And if Tez Walker turns, you know, gets a year in the weight room and all of that, and turns into the player the Ravens expected, obviously we'll get to Aguilar in a second as well. But, you know, Wallace may find himself still the fourth wide receiver next year. And that's leaving aside that they draft someone again, you know, draft another wide receiver with 11 picks. There's probably a chance that happens. So, you know, it's one of those, what are the offers going to be? But again, if he's just getting minimum offers, that option gives them the ability to give him more money and still keep him relatively cheap against the cap, as if he's, you know, if another team is saying we can't do more than $1.5 million on the cap, the Ravens can say, well, you're going to be $1.5 million on our cap, but we can give you $2.5 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a big advantage there for their purposes.
Here's the thing from the player's perspective. They look at their own future. And if you're Tylan Wallace, you really are probably saying, how many more years am I going to be really playing in this league? I mean, it's got to be a serious question he's asking himself. I know it was a question for Harrison, for players like Urban, sure, you know, who are kind of on the margin of the league. Wallace is not quite in the same boat, because he's probably has a little bit more to offer from what he's done this season, 9 for 9 in terms of catches and 20 yards a target and whatnot. All that's great. But he's been a fine special teams player. If he looks at that and says, okay, if I stay with the Ravens, I get $2.5 million. But it's also an option, from my perspective, on getting $2.5 million for, say, 3 more years, where if his value drops into that 1.5 or 1.7 or even lower range where he's playing for the vet min, once he goes to another team, he's done getting that $2.5 million offer, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That definitely creates an advantage for the home team, so to speak, whether it's the Ravens or whatever, you know, another player on another team in a similar situation. Absolutely.
Love it. Love it. Okay. It's great stuff to learn about today. As always, whenever I talk cap with you, I always learn something new. I'll tell you that.
I always learn something new every year too. It's funny.
Other players in this group, maybe give me three, and I think we did this on the other side too. Three who are three most likely to ascend. And as I'm asking that question, I need to actually pick them out in my own case here.
Ascend into the young producer.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kohler, Kolar, Rosengarten, Mitchell, and Hope. There's Voorhees and Tez Walker. So any of, you know, that's five. So I didn't follow the rules, but
those are the five.
But that would be my hope, that when we're doing this next year, that we're talking about those guys added to the other four and maybe somebody else we didn't expect.
That would be really nice, because that would be a big set of them. And it's a fairly young developmental group. The only guys who are leaving the group are Ben Cleveland, who they haven't given him a chance here, regardless of what you think about the guy or whether he would have produced or not. And Tylan Wallace, who they might be able to get back. It's not really a group that's laden with a lot of free agency risk.
No. And then, you know, maybe there's, you know, the question whether Falele is, you know, going into his fourth year, whether he's you know, on the cut, on the cutting line, or in that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, that 45 to 50 or 55 guy man on the roster, and is he going to make it into the 53 or not?
Okay, so that does bring us to one of the real questions about this, because if you're looking at the veterans who are playing for market value, three of them are offensive tackles who are coming up on free agency, which is one of the reasons why I think Falele is still going to be around either way, whether it's a backup, whether it's a starter. Sure. He doesn't make a lot of money. You know, it's not a big, slightly over $1 million, I guess, next year as a fourth round pick originally.
So
I think he probably ends up staying. But let's look at this veteran for market value group. And I'll go through the names really quickly and then pick one you want to talk about. Aguilar, Andrews, Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, Lamar Jackson, Josh Jones, Patrick McCary, Nick Moore, Patrick Ricard, Ronnie Stanley, and Jordan Stout. We've got five free agents in that group.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Stanley's the big name there. I think Ricard won't be, you know, I mean, obviously, a lot of teams don't use fullbacks. Now, the running game is coming back a little more this year, so that could, you know, that could make teams look at that, you know, adjustments to their offense and, you know, bring the fullback back into play for some teams that don't really use them. Pretty sure the Chargers have their own version, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
The defensive lineman. And he's going to be cheaper. So because that would be the one team I would worry about, because, you know, that's the, you know, the brain, obviously, with Roman and then the Harbaugh as well. Those are guys that would value that kind of guy. And I mean, let's face it, Roman kind of invented him, I guess we'll say, to an extent, too. So I think he'll be, he won't be too hard to resign, but Stanley is the big one, because if they don't, then they have to go get one. A different free agent, or they have to use their first round pick on a tackle. And obviously, you know, with rookies, you just never know. So even as well as they draft it, we know there are plenty of times it hasn't worked out. It's just the nature of the draft.
The absolute highest that the Ravens could realistically draft this year, if they make the playoffs anyway, is 19th.
Right.
It wouldn't even be that good. It'd be in the 20s. And, you know, there's too much pressure on the left tackle position, and particularly this last year, we saw a market that got scarfed up immediately of high quality left tackles. And, mm-hmm. and it started to go south with the selection of Joe Alt by a team that by many accounts didn't need a left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, a tough thing. I'm kind of expecting a Ronnie Stanley signing. And I'm kind of wondering what you think about what's the right price tag for it and the right number of years.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like, despite them, you know, basically forcing him to take a pay cut, he does seem like a guy who likes it here and wants to stay here. You know, their option was to release him, which if he hadn't taken the pay cut, I'm pretty sure they would have. So, you know, from his perspective, I guess, you know, there's something to be said for he wanted to be here. Or he just would have, you know, taken a pay cut and, you know, hit the road. He's you know, he's only 30. So he'll be 31. He'll be 31 next year. So that's not old for a left tackle. It's starting to get there. A lot of left tackles start moving to right tackle at that point, maybe. But, I mean, you know, it's coming off of a deal with, I'm kind of running this through my brain right now, of, you know, $20 million a year. Although he obviously only made 7.5 this past year. So if he completes the season healthy, I mean, that's still the, you know, if he gets hurt, all bets are off, you know. But if he completes the season healthy and plays as well as he has, 12 to 14 a year for 3 years.
Love to hear it.
I could be, you know, it only takes one team to, you know, blow the curve, so to speak. But I would think that would seemingly be for an aging tackle. I'd have to go look at, you know, somebody, you know, I don't know if there's anybody this past year was, you know, similarly situated, not necessarily, you know, coming off a pay cut, but just a 31-year-old left tackle that has been up and down with injuries over the last couple of years. I mean, I think he's played his way to at least 10.
Right.
Again, injury, you know, barring an injury. So anywhere that 10 to 14, and I think he's worth it, you know. And now the question you could have is, he did seem to be extra motivated this year. Now, is there, do they, you know, they know better than we do, but is there a concern about motivation there? You know, there have been those rumors that he wasn't a guy that loved football. He certainly came in one of the best shape of his life over the last 4 years, probably.
Yeah, there's something going on that I really kind of observed this summer, because Ronnie Stanley was at the podium on two separate occasions, or at least he was supposed to be. But he has a very extensive post-practice regeneration process he goes through, cold tub, hot tub, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's primarily cold after a summer practice. And he would make us wait for a long time for him to get to the podium. It'd be often 30 minutes. And the first time he made everybody wait 30 minutes, and then they just called it off. And they said, you know, we'll go home and get him another time. The second time he made us wait 30 or 45 minutes again. And there were four of us left to ask questions when he finally got there. Two of them worked for the Ravens.
And so, right. They have to be there.
So it was me and Jonas Schaefer were the two guys who hung around that were you know, regular media, supposedly.
Right.
And you know, I enjoyed having extra questions I could ask of Ronnie during this time, but it was definitely a weird kind of a podium situation. But I think that it really pointed to how much he's really having to take care of himself to get along. And we haven't really had any moment of, oh boy, he's out on the field, and what's wrong here this year? Right. He's been basically healthy. I'd love to have him back for 3 years, $40 million, if that could be done. I mean, it to me.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
That would be a darn good deal.
Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, if you get 2 years out of that 3 year deal, then you're golden. You know, the cap, whatever, I mean, who knows what the bonus will be, but whatever the dead money is at that point isn't going to be, you know, it's not going to kill you if you get two really good years out of him and you got to move on from him, or he's going to retire, or whatever it might be.
Right. I got one more question about Ronnie's contract structure. So he has an $8 million void hit this next year. So how does that impact with any kind of signing of him they would do?
It doesn't, because that was the last year of his prior deal. So they converted that to, they took away the actual contract year and just replaced it with the void year. So that was going to be there no matter what. Now, if they cut him this year and took it all this year, there wouldn't be anything left there. But that's not one of those situations where if there were four more void years and it all accelerates into that year, by extending him, they could continue the proration of each of those. But because it's that one final void year, essentially, or one void year, there's no way they can avoid that. So it's going to be, it's a sunk cost. As we talked about dead money. It's a sunk cost. So it doesn't really come into play. I mean, it's going to look like his first year, the number, the numbers under his column in that first year, if he does get an extension, are going to look ugly. But it is what it is, you know. They're not going to say, well, we can't give you $40 million. We can only give you 30 because of that $8 million, or 32 right, because of that $8 million. It doesn't come into play at all.
No leverage on that.
No, it doesn't help anybody. Yeah. Now, because that was the thing with Zeitler, we all expected he was going to be re-signed, and they took, what was it? They took $4 million. I think into this year in dead money on that, from his four void years. But if he had signed for four more years, then that would have, and if he played all of them, so it would have been $1 million each year which would have made it easier. So that sometimes does come into play because it gave him more. It doesn't seem like they really went very far, but it did give him more leverage because by re-signing me, I'm helping you out. You know, I'm helping your cap out because you can spread that dead money from those void years. They did it with Pierce. They did it with Aguilar to extend those out a little bit, but they're still next year. There's still a lot of that void, some of that void money from those guys that are still going to, you know, and OBJ too, because the way they did his deal in the post June 1 release. So those are the kind of things. There's probably almost 20 million in void money on the cap next year is dead money. So that's where, when I said in the our first segment that, you know, they're going to be tight against the cap, and that's so that makes some of these decisions harder because they're going to have to pick and choose in some cases.
So a lot of this void years, by the way, an artifact of the COVID era. The Ravens have tried to stay away from it, but it's kind of a self-perpetuating continuous motion machine, or whatever you want to call it. You have to kind of do more of it in order to make up for your lost.
Well, yeah, they were walking in. I mean, that 2019 team was relatively young. A lot of guys, you know, they'd gotten Stanley done, they had gotten Humphrey done, so they had their probably their two best players on both sides of the ball at that point, leaving aside Lamar, already taken care of. But they had a pretty clean cap. But when the cap goes back down, and obviously every team had to deal with this, but when the cap goes down 40 million, when you're expecting to go up 10 or 15, that's a huge difference. And then obviously the OBJ contract and the ones they gave out last year with all the void years, they were trying to maximize their cap space so that because when they put the tag on Lamar, if a team was going to come in and front load a deal, they needed to, and I think they did it successfully, obviously, is they made it clear we're doing our contract so that we have the most flexibility possible to match any kind of deal, however you want to structure it. If you're going to try to put a gazillion dollars on the 2024 cap, we're going to, or 2023 cap, I guess it was then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2023 cap. We're going to maximize the cap space we have and we can create, so that we can match any offer. And obviously, I mean, people want to talk about collusion and things like that, but I think it's more the Ravens, the way they handled their cap. They made it clear that he ain't leaving, you know. And they said it. I mean, they said it too. He's not leaving. You know, we're going to do everything we can to retain him.
Okay, and there was so that. It would have had to have been a poison pill or something if some team is willing
and
to pay a lot.
And you can't do those anymore. Yeah.
Oh, you can't.
You can't do a true poison pill, which was if he plays, you know, so this, it was the Seattle, Minnesota that went back and forth between them with Hutchinson and somebody else. But it was the poison pill was something like, and I did, he went from Minnesota to Seattle. So Seattle's poison pill was if he plays 8 games in the state of Minnesota, the contract voids.
Okay.
and he's a free agent the following year. Well, obviously if he's in Seattle, he's not going to play 8 games in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Different poison pills.
There were some crazy ones that, but yeah, the only poison pill they could do would be front load the deal. So
there
much
you go.
Or fully guarantee it. Yeah. But, you know, and obviously if they fully guaranteed it, an offer came like that, the Ravens would have had to decide whether they would match it or not. But they made it clear that any kind of structure, they were going to be able to match the dollars.
Yeah. Okay. So front loading would be the way. Give a guy $75 million in the first year and then force that to be prorated, I guess, over 5 years with an immediate check paid for that value.
It would be putting, not $75 million, but it would be giving him a $50 million cap number. In the first year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Ravens created, because they didn't restructure anybody at that point and they did all these void years. So they made it clear that we've got the flexibility, you know, and he was already on a $32 million cap number for the tag. So they would only in that case need, you know, 18 more million in cap space to match a 50 million or, you know, 28, if it was a $60 million cap number.
Right. All right. Great stuff. Anybody else from this? Derrick Henry, I mean, he's one of the significant cap savings. If they cut him, I don't see any way after the year he's had that you don't look at that $7 million and say, yippee.
No, and well, there will be, technically there would be more cap savings because he's already hit, well, let me do it this way. Once he hits 1,500 yards, he will have earned $2 million in incentives that did not count this year. They were not likely to be earned this year. So he gets paid those next year, but that also, he has the same exact schedule next year. So that means his cap number technically goes up by $2 million because they're no longer not likely to be earned. They are likely to be earned. So that cap number, you know, that's listed everywhere right now of what, about $9 million, I think it is, or $10 million, it's going to go up by two. So there would be, yeah, so it's almost $11 million. So it's going to be $13 million. I still don't think anything changes there other than maybe they tack on another year if they, you know, he comes out of this year healthy and, you know, and they feel comfortable that he's going to, I know it's older running backs, I get that, but that I think that would be more likely than being cut, is that they might tack another year on. I don't think, maybe not two, but just to spread out some of that money. But so, yeah, his cap number is going to go up by $2 million. I'm assuming he gets to 1,500 and he's at 14 something now, I think.
Yeah, that's a real good close.
Yeah.
In the offensive tackle situation, because McCary and Jones are also unrestricted free agents after this season. I believe that's true of Jones. I don't think I blew that.
He was on a 1-year deal. Yeah.
So Jones, there's nothing obvious that he would earn a big contract, but he also does not make the vet min. If I recall, he's more like
he did get a little bit. And I get, they signed him. I think it was, well, no, actually Stanley did his deal pretty early in the off season. So, I mean, I think he was, you know, he was going to be the backup left tackle. So they didn't run into this problem of having to move guys from the right and, you know, and they wanted, you know, or put McCary there. I think his number's about $3 million. Mm-hmm. I think you could get him back for, you know, right in that same split, you know, if they feel comfortable enough with him. They've had him a year in the building now. If they feel like he's a, you know, legitimate enough. I mean, you're not going to have a star backup left tackle, obviously, but they do need to start looking at, even, you know, if they do extend Stanley for two or three-year deal, they still need over the next 2 years to draft a tackle pretty high. So whether they need a replacement at left tackle or a replacement at right tackle, they've got a high quality, young, cheap player. But Jones for another year probably wouldn't be, you know, I could see that happening.
He could make a lot of sense of that. He's looked pretty good, actually, from what I've seen. It's been very, very limited, obviously, in terms of his time on the field. But the other choice is Patrick McCary. And I think he's actually going to be a fairly expensive player this offseason. A lot of people scoff at this because he's had a lot of penalties this year. And he just had a bad game where he didn't have any penalties, but he played terribly.
Right.
The truth of the matter is, I mean, most of his deductions this year have been from penalties. A lot of people would look at that and say those are correctable points to a certain degree because he presumably, sure, there are technique things he can reduce in particular in the illegal man downfield, very costly penalty.
Yeah.
And you know, he presumably could stop that. But what do you think is a number for him? If you want to re-sign him for 3 years at this point, what do you think you have to pay?
Yeah. So Jones is actually $1.79 million. So you give him a little bump to $2 million, and I think, you know, that would be a fine deal for Jones. Just give him a slight bump or maybe 2.1. So I think he's easy to keep around. McCary's deal, I believe, averaged about, I think it was a 5-year, about $5.15 million. So I'm not sure. it depends on where they, again, is he going to be the swing guy again? Because that's a lot of money for a swing backup. You know, I mean, he's valuable because he can play all five positions, basically. I'm not sure guard is the best spot for him either. Mm-hmm. So because that was a 3-year deal, I think. Yeah, it was a 3-year deal. He's only 27. He could get 7, 8, 9 a year.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd pay him more personally. You know, if I was the GM, I'd pay more than that. But that, again, there might be a GM out there that sees, or people, or maybe people see him as kind of this, which I think probably is, to me, is accurate. He's a super utility guy that will give you five good games to fill in, but you don't necessarily want him starting 17. You know,
yeah. I mean,
I don't know how to define that, you know, but
yeah. James Hurst is the last contract, maybe of a sort of a backup guard tackle kind of player, a swing player. He certainly didn't play center or anything like that, but he did fill in ably, I would say, both at right tackle and at guard, not exceptionally. 4 years, $17 million or something, his second year with the Ravens. He's the guy who actually managed to announce his retirement from the NFL. And think about how rare that is. Usually players are cut.
Yeah.
They think they're going to come back, and they work out for a year, and the phone doesn't ring. Right. And then they turn in their paperwork, but they're not announcing their retirement at that point.
Yeah. Well, he's also, I don't think he completed those 4 years here. And I think when he went to the Saints, yeah, I mean, he was only here for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So he got cut the year after they gave him that deal. So it was a 4 year, $17.5 million deal. He only completed one of those years, or maybe two. There's a 2019 is missing here. So maybe he was, yeah. So it was 2 years. He must've been on IR that second year. Mm-hmm. And then he went to the Saints for 4 years, but that was a 4 year, $7 million deal.
Okay.
You know, it might've been 1 year deal, 1 year deal, 1 year deal, or maybe there's a 2 years in there. So I don't think it was. So, and I think Makari's better. I mean, I think Makari's better than that. So, yeah. So I think you're probably in that 7 to 8 range, maybe, mm-hmm. since this was 5.
Seems like a lot relative to the Ravens' other cap needs.
They're going to have to make some tougher decisions. And I think that's one where they probably will, unless the market doesn't develop for him. And, you know, he could be one of those 4 year qualifying guys. I'm not saying he's going to go down to $2.5 million, but if nobody offers him anything, you know, that's certainly a possibility there.
He could also be a guy that the Ravens floor him so he can go to free agency and they give him a 3 year, $10 or $12 million offer, where, you know, he's 3.5 or 4 million. It's below his market value, but it's
right.
still an amount where they would not be unhappy having him at that price.
Right.
And maybe he does better. And maybe if he does better because the Ravens offered him a floor, they could, you know, they get the right of first refusal on that.
Yeah. And it could, you know, could be one of those where it's a 4 year deal, but there's a big bonus in there. So the cash in the first 2 years, even though it's only $4 million a year, but the cash, it's cash heavy in those first 2 years with the big signing bonus. So while he might be getting more per year, quote unquote, on a deal somewhere else, the upfront cash is better here. With the understanding that if you know that by year three he's probably not going to be here, but it still works out better for him cash wise.
Right. All right. I think we've talked through those guys to a good degree. I did include the special teams play. For more detail, go to the article. I don't detail out the veterans playing for market value because I think the situation is most obvious with them. So I didn't talk about Justice Hill, who's played well, or Lamar Jackson, who's out earned his contract by an right. incredible amount in his first 2 years. But let's get on to the veteran cap value concern. There's only one on the offense or special teams, and that's Justin Tucker.
Yeah. I'm shocked at some of the people that are, we need to cut him tomorrow or yesterday or, you know, and as if he's never done anything for us and as if kickers don't go through slumps and come out of it. And yeah, it could suck for this year. He could miss a big kick this year. But kickers kick into their 40s. He's not lacking power. He's slicing, hooking, you know, overcompensating after, you know, one goes wide right and then he overcompensates and it goes left. So it's accuracy more than anything. I think I'd bring in a guy on the practice squad just to have a guy in case, you know, it gets really, really bad. At least you got somebody in the building for a couple of weeks. But I would still be shocked if they move on from him this year. And then in the this offseason, it gives them the whole offseason to figure it out. Obviously, if in – and I'm assuming he's kicking fine in practice. I don't know the answer to that. But, you know, because they – I think there would have been somebody in here sooner if he was looking just as bad in practices. And obviously, practice is practice, and it's not a game.
Yeah, he did have a 68-yard field goal. The officials actually called it improperly, but it went over the bar this summer. That was a you know, kind of a big event. Now there's a whole bunch of kickers either trying or making kicks from the mid 60s now that are just
That record, I don't think
Tucker's record's not going to last very long. The 66.
No, that's what I was going to say, and especially that the kid in Dallas. Now he's having some accuracy issues himself. He can kick it a country mile, but he's also having a down year from his past year. But you know, if it gets to the spring and the summer next year and it's looking bad, by then they can use it. I mean, it's over $5 million in dead money. He actually costs more to cut than keep next year, and is a sunk cost. But but he's an I don't see until they are truly forced to, and if it does come in, you know, in training camp next year, it's after June 1 at that point, so they can spread that dead money out. And obviously, cap shouldn't be the main concern. And you need a reliable kicker, but I'm not sure who they're getting off the street right now. That's necessarily none of them have a pedigree. And you know, we've seen plenty of kickers come in and, you know, miss kicks, you know, and I mean, we've been incredibly lucky. I mean, I think we've had really just four kickers in the history, and Hauschka was only here for what, 2 months, but he ended up having a 10-year career and a couple of Pro Bowls, you know, a really good kicker.
All the other young guys who come through the Ravens system, that include Will Lutz, who had a long career, and I think he's still kicking actually.
Yeah. He's somewhere. And, Graham Gano came through here, and the guy who was with the Bears and 49ers, he's, I don't know if he's retired, but he's not on a team right now. His name is escaping. He was here when Stover was here. I mean, he's up there in age.
I'm working on that one now too. Yeah. You got me. Okay. In any case, Hauschka, of course, had the long career after missing the big kick in Minnesota. Billy Cundiff did not have a career.
Well, and he was a journeyman before he got here. I mean, he probably had the best stretch of his career here until that kick.
And that is the kind of guy you might get in the playoffs. And I don't see a reason to do it even for the playoffs here. I wouldn't do it. But for next year, I think you start with Tucker on the roster and you see how it plays out, because you've got a lot invested. If he's good again, he's going to be really good again, I believe anyway. And I also got to figure out what else is wrong with the process. Is it something about the way Stout is holding the ball? They're kind of saying it's all Tucker. You mentioned you didn't think it was a reduction in leg strength. I think that actually might be part of it. And it's not.
Maybe
it's not
overcompensating,
the whole thing,
maybe.
Yeah, like he's having to follow through harder on the ball or whatever. I don't know all the biomechanics involved because of that. And that's causing, like, if you swing too hard with a golf club, you might be more likely to slice or hook.
Sure. Yeah. Robbie Gould.
That's a guy.
The kicker. And he was here. I mean, he had a long career, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe he wasn't back. He probably was here with Stover, because Stover was here. I mean, he was around since 2005. So yeah. So he was, I don't think he ever kicked a field goal here, but I think he was kind of the long distance, because Stover couldn't kick off and they wanted to save his leg. But I was looking at stats on Stover. I like he would attempt one or two 50-yard field goals a year.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, if, you know, Tucker's kicked 14, and, you know, he's had 14 attempts in some years. So, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, I don't envision that. There's no way to ask him for a pay cut if somebody wants to say, well, he's making too much money based on what he's done this year, because the only way to give tell him you're going to cut him. But if the numbers are such that it's going to be really hard to cut him, then you know that's there's no leverage there.
Right.
And that's why people wanted to get rid of Marcus Williams You know, they, Marcus Williams should have taken a pay cut last offseason, and Humphrey, but there was no way because the dead money was so, so big that there was no way that the threat was an idle threat, you know?
So I'm going to ask your opinion on this. I kind of know what the answer might be, but there's a large contingent of fans that A, doesn't understand the cap, and B, has no interest in understanding the cap, and they don't want to be bothered with it. And they say, I don't care, make it happen.
Right.
Is there a way to be a football fan in 2024 and really not understand the cap, at least to some degree? You don't have to understand it like you do, but not to understand it, at least from a perfunctory level.
Right. Now, I mean, you know, I had one of my really good friends go to games with every week. He one time said something, and I'd never really thought about it. So he's like, teams have to do three things really well. You have to draft well, you have to develop well, and you have to manage the cap well.
Yep.
So it is that important. And, you know, because people only look, I mean, obviously I'm immersed in it, but, you know, people look at it so perfunctorily. Oh, well, if the Chiefs can do all this and the Saints can do this every year, well, we're seeing what's happening to the Saints now. You know, I mean, they've had to redo contracts just for guys they probably don't want around anymore, but they have to redo them and extend them and do these kinds of things because it's the only way they can stay under the cap and get under the cap. I mean, Carr's actually having a pretty good year there now. They're going to have to get rid of him this year because there's just no way they can probably, unless he takes a major pay cut, because there's just no way to make their deals work. So, you know, when you look at it just, in a superficial way, you don't realize, oh, the cap's fake. I get that, you know, on Twitter, I'll get posts and somebody will say, oh, the cap's fake. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like, you know, throwing the middle finger up and saying, yeah, whatever, dude. Yeah. But, yes, I mean, it is really hard. And I think that's part of it. It's like, okay, well, and I get it at some point, you know, and if Tucker was, and I know it's bad. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, there's some kickers out there, a couple kickers worse, but, you know, that don't have the history. Well, they're going to be gone, even no matter what the money is. Mm-hmm. And even if they're, you know, even if they're highly paid, but not don't have his track record. But this is his first blip, you know. Yeah. And actually, some of his numbers early in his career weren't that great. I mean, you know, it was only till like his third or fourth year that he was dependable, but you know, he really started kicking the 50 yarders and really becoming more accurate, you know, and honing his craft, I guess, so to speak. So, but, you know, he can kick into his 40s. Maybe he's not going to have the distance anymore. But if he figures out the accuracy thing, he's going to be good for another 5 years, you know, right, at least.
He is, even with the stretch, he is unquestionably the greatest kicker of all time. And, it, you know, this is one of the things in terms of total field goals plus extra points over expectation. He's constantly has been great at that. These last 3 years have been a decline, though. Mm-hmm. Also happen to be the stout years of Boulder.
Right. Well, so, the 50s last year were bad. But inside of 50, I think he only missed one last year.
Yeah, he's still fine, but 3.5 points above expectation. The year before, he's 8 points above expectation, which is below his norms. And this year he's in the negatives.
Right.
So the question is, you know, is some of that on Stout, the drop off from Stout to Cook, but also him getting to be 35 years old now, you got to really put it some of that.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to run their offense differently.
Yeah.
You know, if it's inside of 50, you let him kick. If it's outside of 50, at least for the time being, you've got the ultimate weapon in Lamar. And, you know, if it's fourth and three or whatever, you're probably going to go for it, you know, and it when otherwise you would have been, this is, you know, it's 55 in, this is, you know, this is a guaranteed Tucker 3 points. They're going to have to make some of those tougher decisions, which Harbaugh hasn't always been, you know, shy about doing, but Tucker's been a security blanket, you know, an incredible security blanket that most teams haven't had. Now, obviously kickers are starting to get better and better, but, you know, but he was certainly on the forefront of the, you know, the bombers, so to speak, that were, you know, 50 wasn't a problem.
Right. He was definitely on that forefront. Going back to the cap thing for a moment, because I know there's a tendency always to like undervalue what someone else does in terms of analysis of football. The cap is one big one where I think people are making a huge mistake if they look at that and they middle finger it in so to speak. And it really is. Anytime you kind of minimize that language wise, you mentioned your reaction to it. And it's like you cannot not learn about the cap in this day and age and consider yourself like an informed football fan. It's too important to everything you do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, another one of those kinds of things, and obviously Deshaun Watson was absolutely the wrong guy to, you know, if anybody was going to get a fully guaranteed contract, he was the wrong guy. But when people were just like, oh, well, Lamar deserves a fully guaranteed contract. I mean, I love Lamar. I didn't want Lamar to go anywhere else, and I wanted to get every penny, you know, but, and you know, Watson's play has declined, but he's also been hurt. And now you're looking at, they're really stuck. I mean, they are totally stuck. And again, he wasn't the right guy to do it for. But, you know, when you got Lamar, you got the running, you got the, you know, somewhat of a higher risk. I don't know how to quantify that of injury and things like that. Mm-hmm. The fully guaranteed deal with, when you're talking 250 and now approaching 300 in the future, that just screws your cap so badly if something goes wrong.
And again, a team that's in utter hell with regard to their decision making because they don't draft well. But the Watson deal, I think they do have insurance on the remainder of his $92 million, and I don't know how much their return is
because it's not a huge amount. And it's only if he's injured. So they will get a credit next year for the games missed this year. So for instance, I'll use Marcus Williams as the example because the Ravens had insurance on his deal.
Right.
And they got, and I don't know how much they insured. Yeah. I don't know if they insured the whole thing. You're not insuring the whole thing. The insurance companies aren't insuring the whole thing.
Right. As an actuary, I could tell you, I would not make that bet. I would make you have skin in the game.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I would. Sure. Yeah. And then it's only for the games missed. Due to injury, and I get it. I'm guessing it's only on IR. So if they sit you down for a couple of weeks while trying to see if you can come back without having to put you on IR, you're not getting money back for that. So
it might also be a waiting period on IR, like you don't get paid for the first 2 weeks or something, and then after that you get paid for every week you're on IR. And it might still be only up to 80% of salary loss during that time.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember. There was an article, I think Joel Corey, who's absolutely mastermind on this stuff for CBS Sports. I'm trying to think. So I think of the 90, they might get $24 million.
Okay.
Well, the 90 doesn't factor in because it would just be last year and this year, and they would have gotten a credit for last year, this year already. And then for this year's games, they'll get a credit on the cap next year. So it wasn't 24 because they also restructured him. So, and I'm not sure how that plays in because if it's just on the pay, the weekly pay, restructure them, you just screwed yourself, but you know, by restructuring. So
it has to somehow include
it might be cash amount. I'm not sure, you know. So I think they were expecting to get like 17, and okay. I think his cash this year was 46. So okay. You know, you're looking at a third, give or take, less than a little more than a third.
I mean, honestly, 17 million of cap relief is an enormous number.
Well, it's certainly helpful, but yeah, I mean, but if he's not hurt in the future, there's that you don't have that, you know. So the next 2 years, they still have to deal with that, you know, and they're not going to let him get hurt. That's the other thing. They got to decide what to do.
Yeah, two things about that. One is, have you looked at the Browns contracts? Because the 2025 contracts, with the exception, I think, of Jack Conklin, almost every veteran they've got is making a vet min contract and has had all their 2025 money already pushed out. It's an incredible, horrific cap situation.
Well, they're planning on the inevitable, I guess, you know. And they're using it, and again, to an extent, that's a cap philosophy too. You keep, because everybody's expecting the cap to just to continue to go up, up, and up, you know, substantially. That you keep, you know, you restructure so the player's getting the same money, and you're pushing it out so that you always have flexibility every year after that. But at some point, as we saw with the Saints, even with the cap going up, up and up, you know, they're paying the piper now. They've let a lot of good players go. I mean, they traded Lattimore. They didn't want to trade a 28-year-old cornerback. I know he's had injury history, but you know, that's, you know, when he's healthy, he's one of the best corners in the league, and they got him, you know, they gave him away for peanuts. You gotta be able to handle the cap. You gotta know, you can't just, it's not fantasy football. You know, it's not Madden or whatever, you know, whatever games there are out there. And I know some of those have salary cap, you know, some of them now actually have some salary cap settings, I guess. Good. But if they don't, you know, or you don't play that, you know, play that mode, I guess. I don't know. I don't play those games. But, you know, if they don't, then, you know, you got to realize that, you know, teams are going to have to make tough decisions at times. And, you know, I think we're going to see some of that this offseason, because it just, with that dead money from those void years, it's going to be, this year's going to be a little tough.
Yeah, I have a similar reaction, by the way, when anybody says, I don't care what the model says. Look, right. I don't care what your opinion of the model is.
If
you look at football right now, the last 20 years, one of the biggest things that's been happening is that analytics, modeling, quants, whatever you want to call them, have really taken over the game in terms of directing strategy, in-game strategy. And it's, you know, you could say, I don't care about it. It was the wrong decision to go for it on 4th-and-1 from the 16-yard line.
Right.
You happen to be wrong.
Right. And they generally only complain if it fails, and it's still,
yes.
And just because it fails doesn't mean it was the wrong call.
That's right.
maybe the play call was the wrong play call, but going for it was the numbers say that's what you should do. Yeah. Yeah. I used to have problems with, you know, and I've learned, you know, over the years too, that, you know, why, you know, if you miss an extra point early in the game and then you go for two in the second quarter to get back, and you know, I was like, why are you know, you're then you could, if you don't get it, then you're chasing that point later too. But then as I've learned more about the numbers, I'm like, okay, it makes sense, because then you know what you have to get at the end of the game. It's like, if you're down two touchdowns or whatever it would be, 15 points, you go for two the first time, not the second time. Because if you fail the second time, the game's over. If you fail the first time, then you know what you need to do from that point on.
Well, the big one that really has been a recent trend is, you're down two touchdowns, you score to go down 8. The very important to go for 2 at that point, to try and be down 6 instead of 7. Completely counterintuitive for football fans. Been proven mathematically. You need to have a 38% chance to make that, to make it a you know, a plus deal. And it's, in fact, the first thing when I see a chart of what's the, you know, the negative score and the break even percentage on the chart is what they have it coded by. If that specific situation does not have 38% late in the game, the chart is wrong. The chart is suspect for reasons, but it's one of these things. In the Harbaugh, the recent Harbaugh 3, John really outcoached Jim by a wide margin. One of the big mistakes Jim made was not going for 2 when the team cut it to 8 points.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go through the transitional players here real quickly. Salah, of course, is one of them. Malik Cunningham, Deontay Hardy, Deontay Johnson, who we probably want to take a minute to talk about. Josh Johnson, Keith Kirkwood, Devin Leary, Anthony Miller, had forgotten he was still on the team. Zaire Mitchell-Payton, Scotty Washington, and Owen Wright.
I mean, a couple of those guys will get, you'll get re-signed, you know, the first to 1 year deals in January, February, whenever the season ends. But obviously none of them are long-term guys, or would you even expect them to be future contributors? I mean, Wright might be the only one, just because had success, you know, with running backs off the practice squad and undrafted free agents. I mean, Gus Edwards was the second or third in line when he came up. There was an undrafted free agent ahead of him who got hurt. And then I think the Dolphins claimed one who looked much better in preseason than Gus Edwards did.
Mostert or somebody? Was that?
Well, Mostert was around, but I don't think it was. It might have been. I'm not sure. It was an undrafted free agent that same year. But anyway, so yeah, but and then Edwards, obviously, you know, when the offense changed and Lamar came in, Edwards, you know, hit the ground running, so to speak. So, so he would probably be the only one. And I, you know, I don't know what to say about Deontay Johnson. You know, obviously, I guess they, I mean, yeah, they got him for nothing. So that I'm still fine with the trade, but clearly they maybe didn't do the right calculus with who he is and his attitude, or they thought their culture was strong enough to handle it and, you know, get him in line, but there's no Ray Lewis around. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I mean, they acquired him as a, you know, to be a backup in case somebody got hurt, and it was great. It was a smart move. I mean, he's a talented guy, but the offense was humming at that point. So why you would expect him all of a sudden to be coming in and getting 30 snaps a game is, I don't know. So, but it is what it is at this point. I'm not sure he'll finish the season. If they cut him, they can't, they still owe him money. So they, you know, if they suspend, they suspend him, they get some money. It's not going to break the bank anyway, but it's not really a cap consideration, but they just don't want to pay him because he's been a pain in the ass. Right. You know,
are they limited in terms of the length of a suspension they can levy?
I think you can suspend a player for up to 4 games without pay.
Okay.
And that would be almost complete the season. Well, that would complete the season
at this point.
Would
it have to be a separate transgression at this point since that
may be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think they'll have a shortage of those. Something tells me something might come up again, but it's a kind of, I do wonder why the discussion didn't happen in advance when Deontay was coming, or if for Carolina, you'd want to prevent the Ravens from talking to Deontay Johnson and telling him, you know, even though giving them any reason not to take him off your hands, basically,
right?
Because they obviously traded him for basically nothing. And if I'm Carolina's GM, I'm saying, nope, you're not talking to Deontay Johnson in advance of this. You take your chances. You buy your ticket. You take your chances here, but we're not allowing that. And we'll take your offer of a fifth or a sixth kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, if that was the best offer they got, that's telling. You know, and as you said, if they were afraid of scuttling that by letting the Ravens talk to Johnson, then that clearly says they wanted him out of there. You know, and I get it from his perspective. He's going to be a free agent, and, you know, he was expecting to be on the Steelers, you know, as of this time last year, he was expecting to be on the Steelers this year, and then, you know, then hit free agency, hopefully on a high, and all that's gone to hell, for him. But, you know, but that wide receivers, I said to one of my friends yesterday, I was like, wide receivers, man, it's just because they don't control anything, you know, running back doesn't really control, but if you're a good running back, you're going to get the ball 10, 15, 20 times a game, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But if you're a wide receiver, you depend on everybody else and you depend on snaps and things like that. And obviously it didn't work out, but you know, there's a lot of things if you want to complain about Harbaugh, I'm okay with, but this is, what are you going to do? You know, had to suspend him. He didn't go in the game. Mm-hmm. And again, and honestly, it's not the head coach who's deciding who's going into the game on offense in any given point.
In the previous games, it's Monken who's making.
I mean, if you're suspending him or you're telling him, no, you're not, you refused, all right, you're not going to the game again. That's different. That's a head coach decision. But yeah, mm-hmm. Player usage is the coordinator, you know, and because it's based on the play calls and it's the personnel packages and all of that. But again, you can complain. People can complain about Harbaugh as much as they want about all kinds of things, and there's some validity to a lot of them. But this certainly, in my opinion, is in both cases, is not his usage and then suspending him. I mean, you know, that's what they had to do.
Yeah, completely agree. I chance of him playing another meaningful snap for the Baltimore Ravens?
10. Okay. 10%. And that's only if somebody gets hurt. I mean, you know, I would have there were 2 passes to Aguilar in that game. I would have much rather him going to Johnson. And I'd be curious to know if that would have been Johnson had he not refused to go in the game. Mm-hmm. Because I think Johnson probably pulls both of those down. They weren't easy catches, but, you know, he's a better high pointer and, you know, better hands for the most part.
Better separator.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously we'll never know.
Yeah. I would put it slightly higher than that just because of where Bateman is right now in terms of the injury.
Well, that's true. That's true. Good point.
It might be 40, but it's still not high.
No.
And I don't think that, you know, part of the problem with Johnson is there's got to be something else going on at practice, because the natural thing would be for there to be a package of plays for him to start him off and then say, okay, you know, you got these 8 plays for starters. And then we're expanded to 16 plays next week and we'll give you new things. Something's got to be going wrong at that right. level where Monken says, I can't use you yet here because you're not my best option, not even close.
Right.
And, you know, I would rather have Tylan Wallace on the field than you,
right.
which has been, you know, some of this. So, yeah, it's frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating for him. And honestly, in this particular case, I don't really have a lot of sympathy for him to be.
No, I don't either. I mean, you went from a 2 and whatever team that Carolina was at that moment to, you know, a playoff team and hope, you know, that aspires to more. You'd think that would be, but, you know, he's thinking about his future, and I get that too, to an extent, but playing well and being a good soldier and getting a ring sounds pretty good, even if you hit free agency with down usage, because and people understand why your usage was down. I mean, other teams are going to realize that. Okay, he went to a team that was humming, and, you know, and but when he was in, he made the most of it, you know. But obviously, that's out the window.
Yeah, he didn't make the most of it when he was in either.
No, falling down. I mean, that was weird too. The falling down thing was I don't ever remember him falling down as a Steeler. Certainly not against us. Maybe he did. I just didn't realize it, but just kind of weird.
All right. Well, obviously a bummer of a situation. The Ravens hoped it worked out differently. But I'm happy that we had this conversation. Always am. It's a great opportunity to talk football with you for now, almost 3 hours here talking about the defense of the offense, but worth every moment as far as I'm concerned. Can you tell folks again where they can find your work online and how they can communicate with you directly?
Sure. So Twitter, at Raven Salary Cap. I'm actually on Blue Sky now. I'm just kind of testing that place out a little, because I know a lot of people are over there. So I'm putting stuff in there as well. And then obviously articles right now, unless there's a contract extension between now and the end of the season, probably no articles until the season is over. So hopefully nobody sees any articles till the middle of February.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening for all this time. I hope you listen to both shows, because these are some of the I think the best content we do each year. Please hit us up with a 5-star 50-word review if you don't mind taking the time. And as always, pass along the show by word of mouth. I'm going to try and get on Blue Sky as well, Brian, and just see how that works out, just to have a different place to post up.
Yeah, I mean, if there are people there, more people you can get to, right?
There you go. Always looking to expand a little bit.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for coming on, Brian.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.